Hey, everybody. Welcome back to another episode of Quick Reviews on Pandamanga.com. We went and saw Pacific Rim, and it was amazing. I love this movie so very much. Mm-hmm. Let's go around and introduce the huge amount of people we have sitting with us today.
There's a lot of people for a quick review.
Yes, it is. So it may not so quickie review. How about that? We'll just change it.
So gangbang review.
My perpetual partner in the quickie reviews, Dustin, is back with us.
Hey.
And then we have from AskMetalhead.com, Justin.
Like, that's a surprise.
And then back with us again, John R. Foltz.
Giant robots.
And then from WaterfrontComics.com and the 4Js and a podcast, John Harder.
Good evening, everyone.
And then, of course, we've got my fearless co-host, Joe.
Hello, hello.
All right. So now that we've all said our piece, let's go around and talk first about what we liked. So let's just go around in a circle. We can be a little bit more organized this time.
Can we talk all at once? That would be even better.
So, Dustin, what's that to you in this movie?
Everything. I loved it.
Can I go see it again right now?
Pretty much. Admittedly, I'm kind of a geek about the mechs and all that. I have about half of a shelf of DVDs of different mech animes and everything, and I thought this was awesome.
I was wondering if you were, like, wishing somewhere in the middle that one of the many different Jaegers would actually transform. Because because it wasn't, like, right when they first made the Jaegers, like the graphic novel that we talked about the other day. It's deep into the years. It's, like, years. I mean, like, what, 15, 20 years?
20 years, probably.
Yeah, and so they've had some time, and I was kind of sitting there next to Dustin thinking to myself, like, I wonder if he's going, like, come on, something transform.
I want to have one with three arms.
It's true. That was cool.
I'm so glad they distance it from the Transformers things, though, because I'm not a fan of the Transformers concept in general.
I think that one of the things that was really cool about this movie was that its reference material didn't, like, burden it. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's obviously heavily influenced by Japanese cartoons, and we were just talking about Ultraman.
Godzilla movies.
Right, Godzilla movies for sure. And then, of course, if you're an anime fan, Evangelion was a heavy influence in this, for sure.
And would Robotech qualify as well?
Maybe, but not so much.
Not so much.
Yeah, Robotech's a little bit of a different kind of feel. Would you agree, Dustin? I mean, you're the Robotech expert.
Yeah.
Most of that shelf he just mentioned is Robotech.
Yeah.
So anything else that really stood out to you, Dustin? Like, can you pick something? His eyes just rolled in the back of his head. He's like, oh, so good.
He's reliving the entire movie experience going, that was awesome, 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 that was awesome.
Putting him on the spot.
I think probably the first, or kind of the main fight with Gypsy Danger, I just thought that was awesome.
When he came in and, like, kicked at the ass of two kaiju. Like,
it just freaking that awesome. Whole scene was just, there was just nothing I didn't like about it.
It was even well lit.
Yeah.
Like, for being a giant robot, giant monster in the middle of downtown Tokyo, the lighting was spot on. It's all the neons that you kind of expect it to be, or downtown Hong Kong, but
yeah. It was sort of like neon saturated. It ended up looking really cool. It didn't, right. You know, it did a good job of looking surreal, but not fake somehow.
Well, this is the guy who gave us Pan's Labyrinth, one of the most gorgeous movies ever.
Ever. Yeah.
Right.
Oh my God, it's such a good movie. Justin, what's that to you, man?
So I'll preface this comment by saying that I'm not necessarily like giant robot guy. You know, when I was a kid, Transformers were pretty cool. And I remember sort of walking out of seeing Transformers going, the first Transformers going, wow, that was really good. I really enjoyed the movie. But so this movie cost me about $100, right? Because I paid for five tickets, and then I have my kids, and that's another $25 with the candy and junk and crap. And I don't regret a fucking penny of it. Nice. And I had, you know, I had reservations that, and as a matter of fact, we talked about it on the 4Js in a comic book.
Yeah, last night.
When we reviewed the sort of the prequel, that I hope it's not just this mash of giant robot. And like, you can't really tell what's going on, because you kind of lose some of that, right? When, especially in the Transformers movies. So that being said, the first time I saw The Matrix, I walked out of the theater going, what did I just see? Holy crap. This is a baseline for all movies that come after it.
Right.
And the first time I saw Avatar, I remember saying this to my wife. I said, if you make a science fiction movie and it is not as good as this, you may as well not even put it out. And I'm telling you, within 30 seconds of the first kaiju smashing the Golden Gate Bridge, I was like, this movie is fucking awesome. Because it was so it was just so well done, and it did not disappoint. There was not 5 seconds of movie that dragged. It was good all the way through. So I really enjoyed it. For me, it was, yeah, definitely. I wouldn't say a surprise, but god damn, it was good.
Yeah, I continually or perpetually was waiting for the other shoe to drop. You know, I was thinking to myself, this is so great, something's going to suck. Something's coming. And right. it never really came. You know, there was a couple things was kind of like, I could have done without that. But it was never like, oh, I'm so sorry they went that way. It was never like that. It was always like, this is perpetually rad.
Right. The comedy was right. I mean, when there was little, you know, sort of injections of comedy, it was right and it made sense. And it was much unlike Lone Ranger. It wasn't tacked on or, you know, it didn't bring you out of
consistent pacing for dude, sure. Tone.
Yeah. I had complete suspension of disbelief. I was completely, you know, I expected to be a critic and find something, but I loved it. So
did you have something you wanted to say, John?
I was going to jump over John Foltz and, and tack on to what Justin was saying about the Avatar. I thought this was the first movie since Avatar where I was totally blown away with how they used the 3D.
Oh God. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I thought that was,
You mean the 3D glasses, 3D, not yes, the CGI.
Yeah. Not the CGI, but the actual 3D. Since Avatar, I haven't really felt that most 3D movies are essential to watch in 3D. This one is, especially the opening scene.
It adds so much.
I totally agree.
Yeah, and actually the CGI was better than I've seen in a long time.
Yeah.
Really it was good. The first like realistic-looking monster. You know, it didn't look like it was Photoshopped in.
No, they were fit in phenomenal. The environment.
Yeah. Phenomenal. And all the kaijus were designed by Wayne Barlow, who's an amazing, you know, legendary monster designer.
I know. I leaned over to the admin. Admin, unfortunately, wasn't able to come and be on the review, but she was sitting next to me in the theater, and I leaned over to her, like, towards the end, when the credits were rolling, and I said, you know you want the art book. She's like, oh, my God. I want the art book so bad.
Yeah, yeah.
She was literally vibrating before, like, in the opening credits.
Yes, yes. It's like, no more previews, more movie time. Yeah. So, John, what stood out to you in this movie?
Oh, everything, man. I'll just make a quick list. The 3D, as my colleague just said, the first time since watching Avatar, I felt like the 3D was worth it for wearing those goofy glasses for 2 hours. Because, you know, I don't like wearing glasses. They bug me. And I get, like, I didn't get any itchy eye syndrome. I forgot I was wearing glasses.
Yeah, you didn't almost get any of that double vision at all. It was.
And the thing is, you're watching this movie about these truly awesome beings, these incredibly giant creatures and these incredibly giant robotoids. And the 3D really works to give you that sense of, wow, these things are massive. These things are huge. You felt like one of those people running like an ant away from the giant feet of the creatures and the robots.
It reminded me of the first time that I was next to a large ship. You know, I mean, you know, like in the water next to a big freaking ship.
Yeah.
It's this sense of, holy crap, is huge.
Or the first time you see skyscrapers.
Yes.
You know, I'm from country boy. So the first time I saw skyscrapers, I'm like, whoa. That's the kind of feeling I got it's over and over again. Unbelievable
feeling of just your smallness and its mass. It's almost this like morbidly alluring fear that comes over awe. You, which is like, wow.
It's truly, the word is awe.
Yeah,
you know? And not many movies can make you feel awe these days, especially.
Talking about ships, the part when he actually uses
Where
the Jaeger uses a tanker ship to beat on the kaiju.
Yeah, it lasted a little
longer. Giant smile on my face. Yeah,
that was nice.
Here's the first thing I thought of was they should have never put this in the commercial.
Right?
Yeah. They should have left that. They should have left that as a moment of where you're like,
well, and even the way that they introduced the idea of the Jaeger coming in with this giant ship. The Jaeger walks by and you see his feet and his hands swinging. And the kaiju in the distance, and then dragging behind him is this ship. Mm. And you hear this rear as he's coming by, and you're like, what is that? And then sure enough, into frame, it comes. And so they really should have just not put that.
They should have not put it.
Because even in that scene, they leave it right to the last second until it's not possible for them to hide it from you any longer. It's meant to be one of those like, what is that? Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah.
It was like the scene in The Untouchables when De Niro, as Al Capone, grabs that bat. And he's walking around the table.
Right.
And he smashes that guy's head in all of a sudden. That's kind of like what they were working with when the kaiju has the giant battleship and is ramming that kaiju's head into the ground with it. It was pretty awesome. to finish up my likes, I liked the fact that it not only had great 3D, but it had great design. It had great everything. I mean, the visually amazing, but not just visually amazing. Good script. It had good characters, and it didn't spend a lot of time boring you with the characters. You got character development, but you got character developed in a way that always served the story. And I'm a right. firm believer that all character development should serve the story or cut it out. And not a lot of people do that these days. A lot of times you get Lone Ranger, for example, a lot of really drawn out, boring moments when you're going, can we get back to the Tonto and Ranger doing goofy stuff? You know,
right.
There was no single draggy moment at all in this movie. I mean, I was amazed that it started off filling us in with, you know, it let us know about the world with a voiceover. And I was like, wow, all this stuff is happening already, and we're only 5 minutes into the movie, and it never lets up.
No,
you know?
It never lets
it up. It just never, all the way to the end. I thought it had a lot of heart, you know. There was,
yeah, as we were coming up to the house, you were talking about that one scene that really impacted you.
Yeah, I don't want to give away anything, but there were a couple of moments there that got me emotionally. And this is a movie about giant robots fighting monsters, and I had a couple of emotional moments during it, which yeah. tells you a lot right there.
Sure.
But again, it's Guillermo del Toro, and he knows exactly what he's doing. And the other thing is, I saw a lot of, I'm a big fan of Starship Troopers, the nice. Movie.
That's a phenomenal, that's like such God, a good
I fucking
movie.
Love that movie.
When that came that's- out, in the late 90s, it was state-of-the-art science fiction movies. They did not yeah. get they did Hell not get any better yeah. at that point.
There's,
and I saw that, especially with the pilots of the Jaeger. Mm-hmm. I saw that same kind of dynamic, and they, you know, of course, that comes from fighter pilots and the way they act. But there was a lot of that. There was also a lot of Blade Runner here, because you get a lot of futuristic Tokyo stuff, you know. And
yeah.
I feel
yeah.
like this
that
movie
sort of neon tone and
yeah, the light.
Yeah, there was yeah. I got like a Blade Runner flashback.
It was very
I got a
wet all the time,
flashback.
Always raining.
Right, sort of.
And overall, just an amazing. The reason you go to the movies, basically, to see a movie like this, to be blown away, to be a sheer spectacle, but also to have a good story told. You know, so
this is the kind of movie where somebody says, do you think it's worth seeing in the movie theater? And you go,
yeah,
yes,
you have
yes.
to see it.
This is like, don't wait till it's on video. Are you kidding?
And can't highlight this enough. See it in 3D.
If you can see it in 3D, go see it, because it really did not detract from it.
The
at
bigger
all.
The screen, the better. Put those 3D glasses right. on. That is the way this is meant to be seen.
Yeah.
So, John, did you have anything you wanted to tack on to what you had mentioned before?
Just about how amazing the 3D was mm-hmm. and the story. It's all pretty much been touched on.
For sure. Joe.
So, I am an engineering student, and the mechanical accuracy of the mechs made me giggle a little bit.
Really?
Yeah.
Not like, you know, like Transformers where they jump up and they go, and it's like, that's probably not going to work.
Just pieces flying all over the place for no good reason. No, she was giving the guy the tour and saying, yeah, there are about 50 diesel engines per muscle strand.
Right.
To move an arm like that, you would need muscle strands in the mechanism and 50 diesel engines. Okay, yeah, that would move something back that big. And I'm like, holy crap, they're actually accurate with the robots? You don't see that in science fiction.
It all seems so believable.
Yeah. So I got special little mechanics glee knowing that the robots would actually work if you could build them like that.
He's like, it's got diesel.
It runs on diesel.
It's got glow plugs.
They had to leave the starter on,
yeah.
Wait 10 minutes.
If it's cold where it is, if it's cold, it's got to have that battery thing.
Oh, yeah.
Anything else that stood out to you? It just was really just thumbs up.
And it was pretty.
There was it ever?
Like, every aspect of it was pretty.
Mm.
And how?
Oh, yeah.
As Spanky used to say on The Little Rascals.
That's a blast from the past, isn't it?
Yeah. No one's going to know that reference on this. Who listens to this podcast.
I doubt that. I doubt that very much.
I doubt there's very many 70-year-olds that are going to be listening. No.
So for me, I think other than the things that have already been touched upon, because I could gush and repeat things, but why? Something in particular that stood out to me, because I'm a huge Japanese comics fan, a huge anime fan, and one of the first series that really had a powerful emotional impact on me that I bought the art books and copied like crazy was Evangelion. And this had a lot of really cool Evangelion stuff in it. And just like one little detail that I want to bring out, because I could gush about it forever, but one little detail that came out where the girl that Mako, right?
Mm-hmm.
Did you notice that she had short hair and a little blue strand on each side?
Right, yeah. That was hella hot.
Which was hot, but also I genuinely would like to assert that that was a nod to Rei Ayanami from the Evangelion series. She is like an absolute icon in Japanese animation, and she is probably one of the most recognizable characters from that series. And she's this frail, pale Japanese girl with like blue hair, and it's just kind of weird looking. And she also kind of has a father-daughter sort of weird relationship with the guy who runs everything for the Evangelion program, which is kind of familiar in this sense. And it's just like her character, I really feel like, was not based on, but definitely had some subtle and I think well done nods to Ayanami Rei, which was really awesome. You know, because I when I saw her, I thought to myself, like, oh, that's cool. That's, you know, maybe she'd be kind of like a Rei character. And sure enough, you get in there and she's got the little blue strands and she just kind of acts like that. And she has that relationship with, what's his name, Pentecost. Mm-hmm. And I was just like, I just, in my little inner anime freak, my little weeaboo was like, wee! So, so cool. And I think that that's really cool that they can have a movie that's so geek-tastic. Like, so, mm-hmm. It's such a nerdgasm. The whole movie is so ridiculous. And they're able to do it tastefully instead of it coming across as cheesy or, you know, these like lame cameos or things like that, you know, like they
wasn't
did
campy.
No, not campy. They did these really serious, classy nods to a couple things here and there, but they were nods. They weren't like, ha ha ha, hint, hint, wink, wink, animal, ha ha ha. You know, it's like, it wasn't lame. It was really well done.
It doesn't start off with the Benny Hill soundtrack. as the first, you know,
And this movie will play to people who aren't geek/nerds/fanboys. This movie will play to people who don't read comics and totally, aren't into sci-fi. Totally, they'll just go, like when people went to see Star Wars in 1977, the game was raised. A whole new bar was set. And people that weren't into sci-fi, like my stepfather who took me to see the movie when I was in third grade, came out of that movie impressed as hell. And he hated sci-fi. But that was something you couldn't deny when you saw, oh my God, real looking starships having real looking battles. And it was a new standard. And just like Justin mentioned, The Matrix, when you saw that, you were like, wow, a new standard for action movies.
Right.
And a new standard has been set. Avatar, when you saw that, you were like, a new standard for 3D. Guillermo del Toro has just capitalized on what Cameron did with Avatar. And it's, I think it's way better because the story is way better. I mean, I loved Avatar visually. The story was sort of a, we've seen that story, yeah,
it's
a lot
played out, you know,
not to bash Avatar, but the story wasn't why you enjoyed Avatar. I think visuals.
This is yet another movie where all the people who are a bunch of geeks who appreciate this sort of stuff and have been reading the comic books and the novels and everything like that and playing the video games, that this is the kind of experience that we yearn for and imagine in our minds and glean from that kind of stuff. You know, and most of the time, people can't really pull that from the media that this sort of stuff tends to exist in. And it's amazing when somebody can take it to a film medium that's so approachable and so easy for everybody to actually be able to sit down and appreciate. And they can create something where like, yes, yes, that's what I'm talking about. That's why robots are awesome.
Right. Right.
Yeah. And I also think there's another market this movie is really going to play heavy with. And that's fans of H.P. Lovecraft, because he, you know, his most famous creation is Cthulhu, whatever, however you pronounce it. Cthulhu. And, you know, this is a movie with like 20 different Cthulhus coming.
Yeah,
out of
the old
ocean,
gods, you know? I was glad that he did go a tasteful amount, not an insanely large amount, because he has a reputation for being a fan of H.P. Lovecraft.
Yes.
And mm-hmm. people that do that can go a little overboard with the tentacle business. Mm-hmm. But I thought, like, again, it was yet another tasteful nod to something else that people who are geeky are going to appreciate that sort of stuff, but it wasn't too much. Mm-hmm. And somebody that didn't know anything about H.P. Lovecraft would have been like, that seems appropriate. Right. They're fighting in the water and underwater, and they've got tentacles. That makes sense. There's tentacle animals in the ocean. Right. Cool. But for us, we're kind of like, I see what you did there.
Yeah, and you know, Lovecraft's basic premise is that there are terrible things on the outside of our universe trying to get in. And that's what he did. But he did it in his own way, where you don't need to know anything about Japanese comics or robot movies or Lovecraft. You can just take it all at face value, which I hate to keep making the comparison, but I'll tell you why in a minute. But it's like Star Wars did in 77. People who didn't know anything about sword and sorcery, ray gun westerns, samurai dramas, just regular folks went to that movie and went, wow, what is this? Where did it come from? The geeks knew that it came from all the sci-fi that had been done back since Flash Gordon days. Mm. He just threw it all together and called it Star Wars.
Sure.
Everything that he loved. And that's kind of what Guillermo does. The reason I bring that up is because I've seen at least one reviewer say already, this is the Star Wars for a new generation. So,
wow.
That's one thing that I heard.
And that's a great compliment. It's a great compliment. But I think, I don't know. I guess I don't know if I disagree. Star Wars, I don't know if I agree or disagree.
I think that it's a little bit of a high order to ever be the Star Wars of a new generation, because Star Wars was such a magnificently huge leap in technology, mm-hmm. and technology, being able to realize that kind of a world. And I don't think that we've ever seen that kind of a chasm bridged ever again, ever since then. It's been incremental and in sometimes larger, sometimes smaller improvements, but I can't imagine anything that...
Well, to be fair, they said that about The Matrix, too, because I remember the reviewers when The Matrix came out going, it's the Star Wars. It was like when The Matrix trilogy was coming out, they were like, this is the Star Wars for the new generation. So I guess somebody says that every now and then. But yeah, you know, I see the point they're making.
Yeah.
Because it sets a new bar, you know.
I could see that for The Matrix a little more than this, though, honestly. But anyway.
No, yeah, I have to agree with you on that. Yeah. I mean, the point I was trying to make is when I, you know, after I saw that, I was like, again, you know, the visuals were so amazing. You had never seen anything like that before. And we take it for granted now.
We do.
I mean, there's CGI in your goddamn cereal commercials, practically, right? So,
believable monsters.
Yeah, in this movie... Yeah, and that's the other thing. They kept getting better. Like at one point, there's this moment sort of towards the end of the movie where one of the kaiju does something that is completely, for me, it was completely unexpected. And it was sort of like, oh my God. You know, I had a couple of holy shit moments in this movie and I'm 40 years old and, you know, and I'm like, you know, I kept on thinking, oh shit, they're screwed, you know? Right. And so
there was more than a couple of points where I actually had to just exclaim, that was awesome.
Right.
it just came out of you out without control. It's so good.
You know.
Oh, and Ron Perlman was awesome. We forgot to say that. God,
perpetually awesome.
Yeah, he was good.
Even though he was sort of a minor character, he was great.
Well, it's freaking Ron Perlman.
He was color.
So now that we've talked about what we liked, and we may have to get into the sort of nitpicky zone to talk about what we didn't like, but that's why we're here. We're critiquing, right? So let's talk a little bit about anything that stood out to you that you didn't like or didn't resonate with you or something like that. So Dustin, you go ahead and go first again.
So for what I'm going to mention is more of things that I noticed that I personally didn't mind, but I can see where other people would.
Okay.
And that is a couple of the reviews I read did mention that they felt that the acting was poor or that some of the, you know, just some of the character interactions were done poorly. And I can see where a general audience might see that. But when I watched it, it was more like watching... I almost felt like it was maybe intentionally overacted a little bit because it was like watching, you know, one of the cartoons or animes or kind of like come to life. And so watching it, I really enjoyed that, seeing them that basically... you know, come to life, like I said. And also a couple moments that I did find pretty cheesy, but I actually enjoyed that fact, is the relationship between the main character and then kind of the hotshot pilot. Very much like the Maverick Iceman relationship from Top Gun.
Oh, yeah, totally.
It seemed totally unnecessary. Like, why is this here?
Because that fight scene was awesome.
I liked it because that's how soldiers are. When the new guy comes in, soldiers who are in war never accept the new guy until he's tried in combat. It just happens. It seemed
you know what? It might have seemed a little bit off if there wasn't some posturing.
And it seemed like
make sense. Yeah,
a nod to Starship Troopers as well.
I don't think it had to be that. It was a plot point.
Mm-hmm. I mean, the guy just came off as a dick.
Yeah,
yes, he did.
Yeah.
Yes,
he did.
It's because. Well, I don't want to get. I think that as things unfold towards the end, perhaps that was on purpose.
Mm. So he's a redeeming character and not. You know, a two-dimensional.
Yeah, but he was totally there's some heroics that he throws down with at the end that makes you go like, oh, maybe he's not such a bad guy. Well, you know, but
I was almost surprised though that they didn't go as far as go, you can be my wingman anytime.
Right. I thought they were going to get paired up at some point.
Oh, yeah.
I thought that was going to happen.
That's the obligatory warriors bonding in war. Sure. You know, character development. You got to have it.
Zachary, I had a few. My son, he came with us and he said, you know, I kind of knew that this was going to happen. I kind of knew that that was going to happen. It seemed a little cliche in the way that sort of, you know, you get down to the very, like the last one. And, you know, it's sort of, there's a little bit of predictability. I mean, you know, at the end of Titanic, that the Titanic is going to sink, you know, there's no, what, you know, and at the end of this, there was sort of a little bit of that, but also it was well done. In a way that I think it doesn't overdraw that sort of down to the very last inch. You know, I mean, it was plausible. So does that make sense what I'm saying?
Yeah, no, I totally see what you're saying.
I loved it when they blew up the Death Star. That was great.
So, John, anything that's that to you that you maybe wish they would have gone a different way with or something?
I can't really think of anything, you know, maybe later.
There's nothing that really screams like, holy yeah. crap, that was a mistake. Really.
I wouldn't say flawless, but I'm saying yeah. so damn good that any flaws to me were like,
just steamrolled by the awesome.
There yeah. was one, and this is nitpicking, and it's towards the end when the scientist character, Charlie Day's character, is rushing back to the base to deliver some pretty important news. And the whole time I was thinking, why doesn't he have some sort of communication device? They had walkie-talkies right? before. And then like all of a sudden he's sort of out there with no cell phone or no. And I thought, okay, well, you know, and again, I yeah. sort of like, I let it go.
They can link each other's brains.
Right.
Together, but Verizon still.
Right. Can you hear me now?
Well, his brain was addled from his experiments.
Yeah. Yeah, so I'll give you that. Okay. Absent-minded
or, God, he was funny.
Yeah.
He could have yeah. pulled out a phone and said, my battery's dead or right. something, you know.
Yeah, exactly. Or grabbed a phone from somebody else.
Charlie Day is such a hilarious.
Oh, he was
actor.
Great. He added a lot to it.
He was on fire in this movie. Just absolutely on fire.
And he
point.
Still seemed himself, too. He wasn't putting on an air to. He was still Charlie Day.
It was just, his character's personality to be that way,
yeah.
right?
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So. Yeah, definitely. So, John, anything that stood out to you?
My only little nitpicky gripe, mm-hmm. and they may be actually saying that if there is a sequel, mm-hmm. is they were talking about why the kaiju were coming over, but we never really got to expound on that. You know, that the kaiju were clones and they were being sent over for a reason, but we never really got to see that explored more. So I don't know if that may be something we see down the line in the second movie if they do that.
There is a sequel planned. Guillermo del Toro said it would probably be a couple years off and that it was going to focus more on the aliens that are behind it.
Yeah.
We did get to see a little bit of them at the end there.
Yeah.
I just, you know, wanted that little bit of more. So
sure.
So I guess you can say that it left me wanting more. So that's a good thing.
Definitely. Joe.
Yeah. So I have been really quiet up to now because I didn't really go for it as much as you guys.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I've been I've been holding them back because I don't want, you know, steamroll anybody because y'all have very good points. And if I wasn't totally distracted by how awesome this movie looked, I would have written it off as a, you know, bad sci-fi channel plot. Honestly, anything that happened in this movie, I have seen thousands of times. John, you were bringing up how... Yeah, when Star Wars did it, when The Matrix did it.
When The Simpsons did it.
No, it's a very archetypal story.
No, I saw the same plot that The Matrix had that everyone was raving about. It's so trippy. You won't believe what happens. I saw that at least 3 times a year before. Like in movies that had come out like the year previous to it. So The Matrix had nothing but the technical pretty. Avatar... Seen that story since it was Dances times. With Wolves.
Fern Gully.
They told exactly. that story sitting around fires 10,000 years ago. Mm-hmm.
But again, it had that technical wizardry that knocked people's socks off. And no one really understood, wait, this movie was kind of dull until years later when they're like, yeah, why did we like Avatar so much? Oh, it was pretty? And that's really the only response anyone ever had.
I knew that when I was watching Avatar. I'm like, this story sucks, but God, it looks awesome.
Yeah. Yeah.
And this, you know, sending the big bomb to the command center, that was Independence Day.
Yeah, I had a very Independence Day feel there.
Right, right. You know, we
even did the speech.
Right.
Yeah. Did the big speech. Had the oops, my shirt's off and I'm sexy from X-Men as Wolverine and Jean Grey.
He was very sexy.
He was, yeah, he
was. So was she.
And don't get me started on her.
She had blue stuff in her hair.
But
have a teenager, man. It's not that sexy.
Way to make it awkward, dude.
That's my job. You know why? Because I have a fucking teenage daughter.
Really, aside from all the technical wizardry and all the nerd pandering to it, I think in a couple of years, maybe when the sequel comes out, everyone's going to come back to it like, oh, they made a sequel to this? Because this, it finished the thought so well.
I can't imagine why they would. And I was kind of glad that they did that. Like, I was sort of thinking to myself, I would love to see more of this, but I'm glad that I won't, you know.
Yeah, exactly. You know. This finished so well. There's so many science fiction movies that give you that, but maybe sort of ending. And it always looks awful and cheesy.
And half the time, the other one never comes.
Never even exactly. Close, right?
Yeah, M. Night Shyamalan, Avatar. But,
you know, when we talk about music, there hasn't been an original riff since.
Oh, yeah.
You know, there hasn't been an original riff in a metal song in since, you know, for 20 years.
Every riff is...
I mean, they're all, yeah, there's only so much you can do.
Led Zeppelin or Black Sabbath.
Right, there's only so much you can do with chords. You can speed it up, you can slow it down, you can break down, you can do all these different things. Mm-hmm. The stories are, there's always those themes and stories.
Oh, yeah. And, you know, that's going to, I'm even ripping off stuff when I write, and even if I don't realize it.
Right.
But, God, it made it, a lot of it really predictable, because I wasn't coming, I was a little jaded coming in, especially after our review of the comic. I was going in willing to give it the benefit of the doubt, you know, letting it wow me, but still kind of stepping back and saying, all right, I'm not going to nerdgasm all over the seat for this. I'm going to, you know, try and look at it with a little bit of a critical eye. And just that little bit of like critical mindedness going into it, it really took the wind out of the sails for me.
I hear what you're saying, and I totally respect it. And I agree that the story, it wasn't a breakthrough story. It was a breakthrough execution of a familiar story. Yeah. And if you want to trace it back to its origins, almost all movies like this are retelling the story of World War II, which is, my college professor said, the great myth of the 20th century was the Hitler myth, the World War II myth, the coming together to defeat the Nazis, good versus evil. It's been recycled over and over and over again, even way before that, before that, before the Nazis, it was somebody else. So this was a sort of an old story retold. Yeah. And much like with these other movies we've been talking about, it's not the story, it's the telling of the story. And that's why I can't say it was flawless, because if it was flawless, it would have also had a story that would have done something I've never even thought about before. And I can't think of a movie off the top of my head that does that. But I knew going into this, I wasn't looking for a story that was going to break my mind apart, you know, like a Charlie Kaufman movie. You know, those are movies where I'm like, wow, that really blew me away story-wise. I expected a great ride. And I didn't, you know, like you were saying, you could tell where this movie was going.
Yeah.
You could really tell.
Like,
but I didn't mind
back,
because
if you step back too much, it was pretty darn predictable.
It was
it was linear, right?
It could have been a cheesy sci-fi channel movie. But the point of this movie, I think, was to make all of that stuff that people might want to call cliche or old hat, to make it better than it had ever been, to the point where it amazed you. Yeah. And I felt like that's not only what Cameron did with Avatar, but that's what Guillermo del Toro has done. And it's kind of like when you see a superhero movie, with they're so ubiquitous these days. You know what's going to happen in a superhero movie every single time.
Yeah. And half the time it's drawn from material that literally already exists.
Yeah.
Like exactly.
But it's how are they going to do it?
Yeah, right.
Yeah. What's the execution of that? And that's why people love The Dark Knight, even though they knew Batman was going to eventually defeat, you know, the Joker and Two-Face and blah, blah, blah. But the way he did it, it was amazing.
Let me ask you this. What if it had ended like Empire Strikes Back?
Ooh, no ending at all.
So
no giant bubblegum victorious sort of.
Well, for a minute, ending, for a second there, I thought it was going to be a tragic ending, and I'm not going to give anything away, but you guys know what I'm talking about.
Right.
Do you think you would have liked it better as a tragic ending?
I would have, but the public would have hated it.
Yeah.
The public would have hated it. It would have been, honestly, if it had had that tragic ending, I could have really gotten behind it because
it would be a better story.
Because all of the buildup would have been so much more meaningful in a big sacrifice at the end.
Right.
Like really giving yourself for the good of all. That's something that would really like blow my mind in a big science fiction epic like this. But as it is, you know, little bit of spoiler, you know, they walk off into the sunset at the end.
It was a life-affirming ending,
basically. Yeah, it is a family-friendly ending.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think if he had had that tragic ending, they never would have backed this movie. He never would have got the funding for the story.
It would have gone to a bad sci-fi channel movie.
Yep.
See, the one thing I can say about what you're talking about with everything being kind of done before is that, yeah, we have seen a lot in, you know, in games and comics and all that sort of stuff. One thing I really liked was, yes, you have, but it was awesome seeing it come to life. And even though it had been done before, but seeing all that and then and even recognizing that I've seen that before in this And there it is, you know, lifelike and in front of me.
And done well.
Yeah. Suddenly it's fresh again.
100 times better.
Because it's done so well.
It was a spectacle. It was impressive. It was amazingly well done. It was, I mean.
But honestly, like, I've seen so many movies that I don't want just a spectacle anymore. Because I can go out and rent 10,000 spectacles and turn my brain off and watch them. If you're going to throw a huge blockbuster like that, like, why not invest a little bit extra into the storytelling? I mean,
it's because the committees that approve these movies want that's going to please the maximum number of people. So they appeal to the lowest common denominator. Give us a happy ending. We want the good guys to win. Oh, sure. Some of them can die, but we got to have this. We got to have that.
Yeah. Well, some of the most phenomenal stories in recent memory don't have a lot of fan appeal because a lot of the time, I don't think that it has to be this way, but I think a lot of the time, some of the most powerful stories are not happy.
I have a perfect example. Just the other day, I finally watched Alex Proyas's Knowing with Nick Cage. It's probably the last good movie Nick Cage did. I never saw it because of the bad
one where he sees it like 6 minutes into the future.
Yeah, he discovers a code that shows terrible events happening and eventually reveals that the world's going to be ending. And the movie doesn't back away. The world, and I'm not going to spoil anything by telling you this, the world does come to an end. And because, and there is a ray of hope though, but Proyas shows you in, you know, brilliant manner, exactly how the world ends and the characters are dealing with that. And there's, I'm not going to reveal what the ray of hope is, but there's a happy ending mixed in there. But overall, you're watching the destruction of the entire human, well, not the human race, but the planet. And to end your movie with the destruction of planet Earth, is there any wonder this movie didn't do well at the box office?
Yeah.
Because Roger Ebert gave it 2 thumbs up. All these critics loved it. And I thought it was great. But it ended with the destruction of the human race in our whole planet.
Yeah.
You can't do that and expect that it's going to make $250 million at the box office.
Yeah.
People don't want
to
see that.
Don't forget why you go to a movie, though. I mean, you go to the movies to take you out of your life and take you out of the economy. And,
absolutely.
You know, spying, being spied on by your own government and all of these, you know, your taxes and maybe your mortgage and maybe you just, you know, all of the mundane, crappy things that happen to us on a daily basis. You go to see something perhaps that you may not be able to achieve in your own small little sphere of influence, right? I mean, and so it's something like this where the last shred of hope, you know, I mean, it rests on the shoulders of two people and just by chance they sort of make it through, right? And sort of at the end of it, you're like, yes.
It's an elevation of the spirit that occurs.
Right, right. So you have some of that. And I you know, again, I think you have to be happy with the storytelling. Maybe not the story exactly, but you couldn't have a memento plot for this type of movie. You can't have, I mean, right? So it is what it is.
Mm-hmm.
It's a giant robot movie.
Oh,
but
yeah.
I did think that, and you know, I was critical of this when we did our review of the comic. I was like, I hope that they don't lose the relationship stuff that was in the book.
Yeah.
And all my reservations were gone. Like, I think they did it really, really well. They gave you enough of a history. And so, you know, the whole time, like, you know, I wanted to reach over to my daughter and go, it's his daughter. It's his daughter. He adopted her. You know, like I knew. Right, right?
So, right. Yeah.
So,
yeah. But so why don't we go ahead
and a couple of the little like campy things, like the last minute is like, yeah, I've got a crush on you.
Sort of, right. My bad timing.
Yeah.
Yeah. I could have gone without that completely.
Right. Mm-hmm. You just mind melded with me.
Right. Anyway, why don't we go around and give our reviews? Our review system goes as this. We go from out of 5, right? So 5 is Midnight Show. And then working our way down towards 1, we've got Full Price, Matinee, Netflix, and Pirate. So, where are you on this scale, Dustin?
Midnight Show all the way for me.
Mm-hmm. Definitely.
Should I do my Joe the Battle Axe impression?
Sure.
I wouldn't even pirate this f***ing movie. No, I would. I mean, like I said, I paid $100 to see this movie, and I don't. I'll take my wife. I mean, it was real. I really enjoyed. I thought it was great.
So Midnight Show for you?
Yeah,
as well?
Midnight Show.
Okay, John.
I would say Midnight Show for sheer spectacle and just as you were saying to just take you away to a whole nother world of adventure.
Mm-hmm.
There was just so many neat things, man. The way that they did so many things was just neat. Like I was like, wow, I never thought they would. Like I would never have thought of that, you know.
Yeah. John,
Midnight Show as well for me.
Mm-hmm. Joe,
Full Price.
Full price? Mm-hmm.
That's still pretty good, Joe.
It's oh, don't get me wrong. This movie is definitely worth seeing.
Yeah, for sure.
But if you want a really great story and a movie that moves you on an emotional, human level, that might not be the reason to go see this movie.
It's a getaway from exactly what Justin was saying.
It's a pulp fantasy.
Yeah, it's a fantasy movie. You get away and you watch this and you enjoy it for the 2 hours. Then you go back to whatever. But this is, like, in 2 years... If someone's, you know, asking, hey, do you remember Pacific Rim? It's like, oh, yeah, I remember that. You know, it's not going to be like, oh, my God, I remember Pacific Rim.
No. Right, yeah.
So, yeah, I remember Pacific Rim.
So now we do our normal ratings, but we perpetually forget to do fun factor. So out of 100, what would your fun factor be? For me, or sorry, I should give my rating first. Midnight Show for me as well. Midnight Show all day long. That was so great. It's totally worth seeing. Amazing to go see it on the opening night and... It was such a great, great bunch of fun. Piggybacking on that, I'm going to give this like a 95. I rarely give out a really, really high fun factor. And the reason we do fun factor is sometimes a movie's not real well made, but it's really fun, you know? And I not only had a lot of fun with this, but I also liked the movie. And so I'm going to give 95. Like, this movie, if anything else, was really fun. Really, really, really fun. For me, like, probably the funnest movie I've seen in some time. Dustin?
I'm going to say, for me, 100. I've, you know, admitted
it's like it reeks inside your brain and just tickles your pleasure center. You're like, mix.
This is one, when it comes out on video, I'm going to own, and it's going to be one that I probably pull out every couple months and watch and just sit there and just be like giddy. Like, I love this movie. Like, we mentioned Starship Troopers earlier. I own Starship Troopers every few months. Pull it out and I watch it.
Oh, yeah.
So, fun factor, Justin?
This is a tough question for me to answer, oddly enough, because I really like the movie. But, you know, when you bring up something like that, I think to myself, anytime Starship Troopers is on TV, it doesn't matter. I'll watch it. And I hate commercials, and I'll sit and wait through the goddamn commercials. Mm-hmm. And it's the same, oddly enough, for like Fifth Element. I can watch the Fifth Element over and over and over.
I'm like that with Beneath the Planet of the Apes.
There's a few movies that I can watch over and over and over again. And I don't know... I'll buy this on Blu-ray, which is that. I mean, that's a pretty high thing for me to say because I don't buy movies really, and especially I don't buy them on Blu-ray usually. I'm going to say 85, and it's not to be overly critical, but I mean, it's a fairly linear movie, and sure. You know, but the battles are so interesting and neat, and they're very clear. So yeah, I mean, I had a lot of fun at this movie, and again, there was many times where I was like, "Oh shit!" There's a lot of surprise.
Sure.
So,
John.
We're talking fun factor. So I'm going to have to lay it a 98.
98, wow. All right. Joe?
I'm going to go in the high 90s on
this. Joe?
Yeah, a solid 90 for me.
Solid 90, yeah. So
that's still a good A-.
Yeah. I really think that the takeaway from this is pretty cliche in some ways, but shit tons of fun. Just a big bucket of fun.
And that's just really nitpicking. The story wasn't that bad. You've seen it before.
It's not bad. I mean, just because it's familiar doesn't mean that it's bad, but being familiar eventually can make it have a little less impact for somebody who's seen it before.
Yeah.
But sometimes I envy like the young kids who've never seen all these old movies and they go in and see this and they go, oh my God, it's the most amazing thing ever. I've never seen it. It's blew my mind. It's like, I envy that. I would love to go see something like this that's doing things that have been done before, but doing them really well.
If I had never like watched the entire science fiction section of the video store I worked at, like
this movie would have exploded your brains.
It would have. You guys would still be cleaning me up off the theater floor.
So I have one last question that I want to pose to those of us that have read the prequel graphic novel. Do you think that it enriched the experience seeing the movie after having read the graphic novel? Or would you rather say you should see the movie then read the graphic novel? John?
I'm going to go with I enjoyed it having read the graphic novel. It made a one thing in the movie that we found out later. We knew... going in from having read it, but other than that, I thought it really enhanced the experience.
Yeah, I completely agree.
I love seeing the reading in the graphic novel, the actual San Francisco being taken over at the first, and then the start of the Jaeger program and how that continued on. So I thought it really complemented the movie very well.
Yeah, I agree. I'm glad that I read the graphic novel first. I feel like it made it a much more robust and living world for me, and I don't feel like it gave away a bunch. I think there was still enough that was unknown in this movie. They had a climax that they were going towards that they didn't even scratch the surface of.
Yeah.
The whole thing about why the kaiju were there, and what their motivations were, was still a complete and total mystery after having read that book.
Right.
It was really just an investigation into the facts of how things went with the humans.
Yeah. Also, with one of my favorite things about having read it first was seeing more of the relationship between the main character and his brother.
Yeah.
Yeah, because that had more impact. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah,
that did actually, having read that, made that connection a little bit stronger for me.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Like, made the loss of him, even though he was only on screen for like 2.5 minutes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It made that a big deal because you knew that. And I wish they'd showed even more of that in the comic.
Yeah.
So consensus is read the comic book first if you have a chance to.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Not required, but
Different than what you were thinking, Joe.
Yeah, right? I was actually able to enjoy both of them as separate entities and as, you know,
it fit together like a puzzle piece. I mean, it was, it really fit together well. It didn't feel weird or abstract or removed.
And not like you had to have one to have the other. Like, you could have read just the graphic novel, and if you never went and saw the movie, enjoyed the graphic novel.
Sure. Yeah, definitely. All right. Well, on the whole, go see it. Good stuff. Lots of fun. All right. Well, thank you guys for listening to another episode of the Not So Quickie Reviews on Pandamega.com. This was the review of Pacific Rim. And yeah, nutshell, check it out. Worth seeing. Go see it in 3D, big screen, all that good stuff. All right. Well, thank you guys for listening. We'll see you next time.